From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. This week, we look at Board of Fish nominations. Some of the governor's recent nominees to the Alaska Board of Fisheries are drawing criticism from many in the fishing industry. One of the nominees works for the Pebble Limited Partnership. The Board of Fish sets policy for Alaska's commercial, sport, and subsistence fisheries. And some legislators are questioning whether residents of the Rail Belt can fully appreciate the importance of subsistence and commercial fishing. And to make matters worse, a perfect storm of timing and the COVID-19 emergency makes it possible the controversial appointees could set policies for Alaska's fisheries without being confirmed by a majority of lawmakers. Also this week, most coastal residents have heard about paralytic shellfish poisoning and the dangers that PSP poses to humans. But did you know that your pets, especially those beach-combing dogs, are at risk and can get sick or even die from eating toxic shellfish? All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Governor Mike Dunleavy's nominees to the board that regulates state fisheries drew a lot of heat at a recent confirmation hearing. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the timing of two of the appointments and the COVID-19 emergency make it possible that the appointees could be setting policy for Alaska's commercial, sport, and subsistence fisheries without first being confirmed by lawmakers.
This month's House confirmation hearing began with a relative unknown in Alaska's world of fish politics. Mackenzie Mitchell is an adjunct professor at UAF School of Management. She called in from a boat on the Yukon River, where she's working as a moose hunting guide.
It almost seems like your natural fit for the board game.
That's House Speaker Bryce Edgman of Dillingham quizzing her on her credentials to serve on the Board of Fisheries.
Why would you put your name for the Board of Fisheries when your experience is on the game side primarily?
Thank you, Representative. I'd be interested in serving the Board of Game as well. My experience, I guess, in both fisheries and hunting in the state of Alaska has been, pretty well balanced.
As relevant experience, Mitchell has touted her graduate thesis on the region's halibut sport fishery, which is regulated by an international commission, not the state of Alaska. Her appointment was also endorsed by Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee. Representative Louise Stutes of Kodiak quizzed a different nominee, John Wood, on his close ties to the governor. Wood had worked as an aide to Senator Dunleavy. He now describes himself as a retired attorney residing in the Susitna Valley.
Mr. Wood, are you currently in any capacity employed by the state presently?
Yes, I'm on the contract with the Department of Administration and the governor's office.
And who do you report to with that?
I report directly to the governor.
Stutes pressed him whether his relationship could influence his independence on the board.
No fish issues whatsoever are covered by the contract. So, no, I don't believe there to be any kind of a conflict.
That didn't satisfy the Kodiak Republican.
Personally, that's very alarming to me. I just believe that morally, if not ethically, it is a conflict, but I will move on.
But the most controversial nominee has been Abe Williams. He's employed by the Pebble Partnership, which seeks to develop an open-pit golden copper mine on the headwaters of Bristol Bay, where he grew up.
You know, I fished in Bristol Bay for 30 years. I've subsistence fished with my grandmother. I've sports fished with my family, my kids. And I cherish this resource just as any other.
Williams was also a plaintiff in a Pebble-backed lawsuit that sought to block Bristol Bay's Regional Seafood Development Association from using dues from commercial fishermen to oppose the Pebble mine.
My challenge to them was largely in recognition to large sums of monies that we pay into the organization being directed to organizations like United Tribes of Bristol Bay and Salmon State.
A judge dismissed the case last year. Bristol Bay's sockeye fishery is limited to 32-foot gillnet boats, relatively small compared to much of Alaska's fishing fleet. Successive proposals before the Board of Fish to open the fishery to larger vessels have been voted down. He denied being part of past efforts to change the rule, but said he can understand why the limit has critics.
As a fisherman, I can see where the limit of 32 foot really creates a strain on your ability to do so adequately and be safe when you do it.
One of the nominees was uncontroversial, longtime chairman John Jensen. The Petersburg resident is now the sole board member from a coastal fishing community for the rulemaking body that makes critical decisions of allocation that can affect livelihoods and impact food security. It's also the arbiter in long-running disputes between commercial fishermen and the charter fleet or subsistence groups. The committee opened the line to public testimony. All of the governor's nominees received support from the sport fishing sector, including Abe Williams. Here's Forrest Braden of the Southeast Alaska Guides Organization.
Mr. Williams has taken flack today for his connection with the Pebble Project, but I personally find it hard to believe that he would knowingly jeopardize the fishery that supported him for decades.
But commercial fishermen took a dimmer view.
It doesn't matter that Mr. Williams has fished Bristol Bay for 30 years. It matters that he works for the Pebble Limited Partnership.
That's Georgie Heverly, a Cook Inlet gillnetter and member of Anchorage's Fish and Game Advisory Committee.
And the lawsuit he was involved in against the BBRSDA was widely opposed by commercial fishermen. So to appoint him as a commercial fishing representative that does not even have the support of the sector is an insult to this process and an insult to Alaska's fishermen.
Others questioned the qualifications of the governor's nominees, all of whom live in the rail belt on their grasp on subsistence fisheries.
Appoint someone who is actually qualified, not someone who is simply floated by or flown into our communities.
Stephanie Quinn Davidson is director of the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission for Tanana Chiefs Conference. She says the Board of Fish makes crucial allocation decisions that can impact food security in rural Alaska.
These decisions need to be taken seriously, and I have concerns with some of the responses you received from these appointees today that showed woeful inexperience with and knowledge of Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim fisheries.
Two of the nominees, Mitchell and Williams, were appointed in April. The legislature adjourned early due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and neither they nor Wood were confirmed. Legislative legal counsel says state law allows them to serve 30 days after the COVID-19 emergency declaration expires, currently mid-December. But if the state's disaster declaration is extended, the governor's Board of Fish nominees could serve until January 18th without being confirmed. That means nominees could vote on fisheries issues affecting Prince William Sound and Southeast without being confirmed by a majority vote of lawmakers. Susan Doherty, executive director of the Southeast Alaska Seiners Association, says that isn't right.
Unless being considered for reappointment, we believe no candidate should be able to sit and make judgment decisions that affect the lives and livelihoods or cultural opportunities of the people of Alaska without first being confirmed.
Yet the Board of Fish's schedule remains up in the air. Its support staff has pointed to risks of holding in-person meetings in Cordova and Ketchikan this fall and winter. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
And on another Board of Fish issue, the board this week was to discuss revising how to hold regional meetings in the age of COVID. It is considering major revisions to the 2021 schedule.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
While most coastal residents are aware of paralytic shellfish poisoning, PSP, and the dangers that it poses to people, not everyone is aware that eating toxic mussels, clams, and other shellfish is dangerous for their pets as well. As KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports, pet owners need to watch out for their dogs as well.
Naomi Bargman leans over the edge of the Stargaven dock to dip a frosted plastic bottle attached to a net into the cold waters of Sitka Sound. Her Alaskan husky, Chickie, lounges on the dock beside her.
Chickie's not very good at helping, but you know, she tries.
She's doing something called a plankton tow. Her lab conducts one once a week to get a snapshot of what's going on with the water's microscopic life.
So the most important thing is make sure you don't lose the bottle. Make sure it's screwed on tightly. And throw it in the water. Try to get some water in the bottle so it sinks. Try that again. And then one more time. And we're going to let it go to its watery grave at the bottom.
Bargman works as an environmental lab specialist for the Sitka Tribe of Alaska. They opened a lab in 2016 to monitor for harmful toxins that cause paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP. What Bargman's doing today helps track harmful algal blooms that can produce those toxins. Blooms can serve as an early warning sign for people who harvest shellfish or pet owners with shellfish-loving dogs. The lab also tests shellfish directly and has a free testing program for Sitkins. Bargman says about 80% of the butter clams they've tested since September have been over the FDA limit. A dog was recently hospitalized after eating a clam at South Stargaven Beach. Dr. Tokoa Wolf from Sitka Animal Hospital treated the sick puppy.
Really, the only thing you can do is the tincture of thyme, supporting them through the toxicity if it's severe. Sometimes that means giving them nausea medication, IV fluids, warming them if they're having difficulty keeping their temperature up, and monitoring their heart rate because it can cause a very fast heart rate.
Initial signs of PSP in a dog include unstable walking, excessive drooling, weakness, and vomiting.
I would say the most important thing is, you know, not to panic. It doesn't mean that, you know, your dog can't take a nice casual walk on the beach. It's something to be aware of. If you see the signs, it's good to get to a veterinarian.
And even though it's rare, dogs can die from PSP.
It's not much of a low tide this week.
Okay.
After completing the plankton tow, Naomi Bargman takes her pup for a walk along North Stargaven Beach. Recently, the lab found high levels of PSP in a butter clam just south of here, on the other side of the creek, the same place where the dog Dr. Wolf treated got sick. As Chickie roams with her nose to the ground, Bargman doesn't keep too close of an eye. She's not much of a shellfish eater.
Fortunately for me, I'm not that worried, you know. She eats other disgusting things instead.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Jacob Resnick at Coast Alaska and Erin McKinstry at KCAW in Sitka. As always, a big thank you to all our listeners and to the radio stations that air this program. For you fishermen, please be extra careful as we head into fall and worse weather. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.